Yemen's Ansarullah movement says it has downed a reconnaissance plane belonging to the Saudi Air Force. China calls on the United States to demonstrate good faith and return to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Myanmar unions call for a nationwide strike starting on Monday with the intention of shutting down the country's economy in an attempt to stop the recent coup. Appreciate you being with us. Now, the Yemeni military says it's shot down a reconnaissance plane belonging to the Saudi Air Force. Army spokesman Yahya Saadi said the plane was hit over Jaf province with a missile which was used for the first time. This is the latest retaliatory attack by the Yemeni military in response to Saudi Arabia's deadly aggression against the impoverished nation. Earlier on Sunday, Saudi warplanes targeted areas in the capital, Sana'a, and some other regions in Yemen. There are no reports of possible casualties. The Saudi war on Yemen, which began in March of 2015, has killed tens of thousands of people, many of them women and children. Saudi Arabia has also maintained an all-out blockade on Yemen, hampering even the humanitarian aid there. Well, let's cross over to Sana'a, joined by Abdul Latif Al-Washali. Abdul Latif, thanks so much for being with us. Well, please fill us in on this latest situation.
Thank you so much. The Yemeni army's air defenses had successfully shot down a combat turbulence belonging to the Saudi-led coalition, to the Saudi forces actually. It's Turkish-made. It was above the Al-Mazariq directorate in Al-Jawf. Governorate carrying out aggressive missions against the Yemeni people. It's not the first time that the Yemeni army targets this kind of a drone successfully. It's been many times. This drone is very sophisticated, so this is an indicate of the Yemeni army's improved capabilities regarding air defense. The Saudi coalition had launched several airstrikes today in Sana'a, so this comes as a response to these hostile acts by the Saudi-led coalition. The missile that targeted this drone was not revealed yet, and it will be revealed according to the spokesman of the Yemeni army at the time.
And now with the situation, Abdul Latif, with this type of pressure now that the Saudis are facing, what are experts saying? Is it likely that there will be more talks and possibly talk of a ceasefire, or is that a possibility? Is it being talked about right now?
The Yemeni army will not stop its offensive regarding Marib and also the operations targeting Saudi Arabia, Aramco, and other facilities. The Yemeni army is putting more pressure on Saudi Arabia, so the talks will only be resumed, we believe, after the liberation of Marib, and the Saudis will have to accept the humiliation of accepting the defeat in the war in Yemen. The Yemenis and the Ansarullah movement refused to meet the UN envoy to Yemen, Martin Griffiths, because he did not stick to his promises. So the Yemeni army will continue its operations, will continue putting more pressure on Saudi Arabia to release the detained oil vessels, and also to have a proper negotiations where the Yemeni people are the winners of this war.
Thanks so much for being with us out of Sana'a, Abdul Latif Al-Washali, on the ground there. Well, the Chinese foreign minister has called on the U.S. to remove its, quote, unjustifiable sanctions on Iran as quickly as possible in order to save the 2015 nuclear deal.
Now that the U.S. administration has expressed willingness to return to the JCPOA, we hope the U.S. side will demonstrate its sincerity and take actions as quickly as possible, including removing the unjustifiable sanctions and the long-arm jurisdiction on third-party entities and individuals.
Wang also criticized the U.S. for its unilateral withdrawal from the agreement in 2018 and its maximum pressure campaign against Iran. He said the U.S. actions had led to a renewed escalation of tensions in the region. The top Chinese diplomat also called on Iran to resume full compliance with the agreement. Iran began scaling back its nuclear deal commitments 1 year after the former U.S. administration left the multilateral accord. Tehran cited the failure of European signatories to deal to fulfill their commitments. Now, the current U.S. administration says it will rejoin the deal once Iran returns to full compliance. Tehran, however, says the U.S. must remove its sanctions before Iran rolls back its remedial measures. Now, the Iranian foreign minister has once again stressed the importance of the complete and effective lifting of U.S. sanctions against his country. Mohammad Javad Zarif made the comment in a meeting with a delegation headed by Ireland's foreign minister Simon Coveney in Tehran. The top Iranian diplomat said Tehran would be ready to take compensatory measures after the removal of the sanctions. Earlier, President Hassan Rouhani also made a similar call in his meeting with the Irish delegation. He called on Europe to end its inaction on the 2015 nuclear deal. The Irish foreign minister said the U.S.'s withdrawal from the accord had been a historic mistake, adding that the new U.S. administration is determined to re-enter the agreement. Coveney is visiting Tehran as the U.N. Security Council facilitator of the nuclear deal signed between Iran and six world powers. A British-Iranian national, Nazanin Zaghari, who was serving a jail term on charges of espionage in Tehran, has been released. A lawyer representing her told the media that she was freed following the end of her five-year jail term. The lawyer, however, said a hearing for his client's other case of propaganda activities against the Islamic Republic is scheduled later this month. It is not yet clear if Zaghari can leave the country. She was arrested by an Iranian intelligence team at Tehran's international airport as she was about to board a plane to London in 2016. She faced charges of espionage for the UK. Zaghari was released from jail in March of last year and put under house arrest for her remaining term due to concerns over the spread of COVID-19 in prison. Three Palestinian fishermen have been killed after an explosion hit their boat off of the Gaza Strip. Our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, brings us the details.
But when the bodies of the three fishermen arrived at the hospital, the officials there said that the fishermen were hit by an explosive device, possibly fired by the Israeli gunboats that patrolled the sea off the coast of the Gaza Strip. There were other incidents this today by Israeli gunboats firing at Palestinian fishermen. Over the past decade or so, Israel have killed over two dozen Palestinian fishermen and injured thousands more. Palestinian fishermen come almost on a daily basis under attacks by the Israeli military that keeps the Gaza Strip under a tight aerial, land, and naval blockade since 2007. We're still waiting for more details on what happened this morning off the coast of the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis. But so far, the Israeli military denied that it attacked the boats. Palestinian fishermen not only suffer from the Israeli naval attacks, but sometimes they also come under attacks by the Egyptian Navy as well.
Myanmar's major trade unions have called for an extended nationwide strike starting on Monday in the latest attempt to stop the military coup. Well, the walkout is backed by nine labor organizations. They say the aim of the strike is to cause full and extended shutdown of the country's economy to reverse the seizure of power by the military. The army took over the elected government on February the 1st and detained civilian officials, including the de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. Protests have been ongoing since that time. Well, a new poll suggests the support for German Chancellor Angela Merkel's party and its allied group is at a one-year low as the country reels from the coronavirus pandemic. Well, the survey conducted for Bild newspaper shows the approval of the Christian Democratic Union and its Bavarian sister CSU has fallen to 32%. Now, the paper attributes the drop in the center-right bloc's popularity to the pandemic. The poll comes just a week before two important regional parliamentary elections. Germany's coronavirus cases have surpassed 2.5 million after the country reported over 8,100 new infections. The Central European country has also reported some 72,000 deaths so far. The German government has come under fire for its slow vaccination program. And now to France, which has extended its weekend lockdowns to northern parts of the country as the nation is struggling to contain its coronavirus outbreak. Well, the measure now puts more than 2 million people across France under weekend restrictions. The pandemic has killed 88,300 people across France, one of the highest death tolls in Europe. In some countries, COVID restrictions brought people to the streets. In Austria's capital, protesters demanded the resignation of Chancellor Sebastian Kurz. Many of them did not wear masks or observe social distancing. In Sweden, people rallied in the capital in defiance of a government ban on large gatherings. Six police officers were injured in scuffles with protesters. Meanwhile, a shipment of more than 250,000 AstraZeneca vaccines destined for Australia has been blocked from leaving the European Union. Big pharma companies are being pressured to honor their contracts as frustration grows across the bloc. Now, the vaccine rollout is going very slowly and supply is dwindling.
Italy, disgruntled by the delay of vaccine supplies to Rome and general vaccine shortages in the EU, has called for a shipment to Australia to be blocked. By doing so, it is activating for the first time an export control system instituted by the bloc to make sure companies like the Anglo-Swedish drug maker AstraZeneca honour their contracts. Australia says its vaccine rollout will not be affected by the ban.
They are in an unbridled crisis situation. That is not the situation in Australia, but nevertheless, we've been able to secure our supplies and additional supplies for importation both with Pfizer and AstraZeneca, which means we can continue the rollout of our program.
Out of 450 million Europeans, only 11 million have had a COVID-19 jab. Tired of waiting, countries like Denmark, Austria, Poland, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic have given up on Brussels and turned to other suppliers. This week, Hungary received its first shipment of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine as another surge of the virus races across the country.
By next week, Hungary will be the most vaccinated country within the European Union. But even this pace is not fast enough to prevent the spread of the virus and especially its new variants.
The EU is only using Western-approved vaccines at the moment. Europe's drug regulator has launched a review of Russia's Sputnik V, which has an efficacy of 91.6%, insisting geopolitics is not affecting decision-making.
I would like to say very clearly, EMA undertakes its analysis of a vaccine based on health-related criteria related to the safety and the efficacy of the vaccine. Full stop. There is no other consideration than that. And therefore, geopolitics have nothing to do with the fact that you consider that EMA would consider a vaccine safe and efficacious or not. It's based on the assessment of the vaccine.
Russia says it is ready to provide jabs for 50 million Europeans the moment it gets the green light. Vaccine rollouts will only work if they happen fast and evenly across continents, outsmarting mutations. Amid a surge of cases across the whole of Europe, the EU has launched a continent-wide project to strip out supply bottlenecks and boost production, hoping to redeem itself and stave off a third wave. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Now turning to the U.S., where the Senate has passed a major rescue plan put forward by the administration to help revive the country's economy during the coronavirus pandemic.
The yeas are 50, the nays are 49. The bill as amended is passed.
The party line votes saw no Republicans voting for the $1.9 trillion package. The sweeping legislation now heads back to the House of Representatives. The Democratic majority chamber is expected to adopt the relief package, making it one of the largest stimulus plans in U.S. history. President Joe Biden hailed the approval as a giant step toward reviving the U.S.'s pandemic-stricken economy.
When we took office 45 days ago, I promised the American people that help was on the way. Today, I can say we've taken one more giant step forward in delivering on that promise that help was on the way. This plan puts us on a path to beating the virus. This plan gives those families who are struggling the most the help and the breathing room they need to get through this moment. This plan gives small businesses in this country a fighting chance to survive.
The legislation would send out $1,400 stimulus checks to most Americans. It allocates $350 billion to state and local governments. The bill also provides $49 billion for COVID testing and $14 billion for vaccine distribution. The coronavirus pandemic has left more than 500,000 people dead out of 29 million cases in the U.S. Professor of Economics Steve Keen believes more should have been done to help Americans get through the pandemic.
It's certainly good that it's been done. More should have been done because the real impact of COVID on the average working American is that their cash flow has dried up, but their financial commitments still remain. So if you look at what that's meant to households in America, everybody's focusing on a so-called increase in the savings rate. That is actually just an artifact of the definition of savings as output minus consumption, where consumption has fallen more than output. But the actual level of household debt in America has risen by about 4 or 5% of GDP. So households are borrowing money just simply to keep on paying their bills. And this will go some way towards addressing that, but not the full distance.
Well, Paraguay's President Mario Abdo Benitez has announced a cabinet reshuffle amid unrest over his government's COVID response. And it has called for greater participation and dialogue to correct mistakes. He also condemned acts of violence. Paraguay's president has faced calls to step down over his response to the pandemic. People taken to the streets of the capital, Asunción, on Friday, blaming him for the deteriorating situation. Security forces fired rubber bullets and tear gas to break up the rally. Several people were injured as a result. Paraguay's COVID crisis has already forced the resignation of the health minister. The country has so far reported nearly 166,000 COVID cases and more than 3,200 deaths. The vaccination program has been hampered by delays in the arrival of the jabs. Well, with that brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. all produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 7th, 2021. I'm Atef Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are read through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports, as you may know, are very important and useful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers in IRIB English Radio. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. However, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus, unfortunately, we can't send you a paper QSL card. As you may know, sending any material, including paper QSL cards or any other items, on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. So please be patient until we get back on track and until the disease is over, and then we can send you the paper QSL cards as before. However, my colleagues in IRIB English Radio are preparing and designing e-QSL cards in the time of the pandemic. So you can wait for them. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Giovanni Seri from Italy, Abdul Alim from India, and Konstantin Marsenkov from Russia. Giovanni, Abdul Alim, and Konstantin, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And about the letters and emails, a zillion thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world, including Mahmoud Sarkar from Shetu Radio Fan Club in Bangladesh. Mahmoud Sarkar is one of our regular listeners. Also, we have an email from Lithuania. This letter is from Desiogas Greblionas. It's such a hard name. Sorry if I mispronounce your name, Desiogas from Lithuania. Also from Brazil, we have an email from Fabricio Andrade Silva. From Germany, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, Ronald Hagensen. And the last but not the least is an email from R.B. Kumar from India. Thanks a lot. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with all these kind letters and emails from around the world. Stay tuned, please. Thank you. like, first of all, we have an email from Mahmoud Sarkar. As he said, this is from Shetu Radio Fan Club in Bangladesh. Mahmoud Sarkar is one of our regular listeners who says, "Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. At first, take my salam to all of your staff. Hope you're doing well by the grace of God. I am an old listener of IRIB English Radio. After a long time, I am glad that I've started writing letters to you again. After receiving a reply to the letter I sent you in the listeners' special program, I decided to send you this email to let you know that we will be with IRIB English Radio forever, inshallah. As an old listener of your radio, I have to say that I totally agree with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's stance regarding Iran nuclear deal with the Western countries. Because I have seen how Western countries, including the United States, have imposed an economic embargo on Iran, which is grossly unfair. Then Iran is moving forward without bowing to anyone and any country. I respect Iran and the Iranian people so much. I wish you all the best." First of all, Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, salam and greetings to you and your fellow countrymen. And lots of gratitude for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Yes, we read all our listeners' letters and emails from around the world, and now it's your take. And no one is left behind, as you may know. And Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, thanks a lot for your notion on Iran and its stance against some Western countries. Your notion is totally appreciated. We also respect our listeners' notions and views in different spheres, in different developments about the world. And Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, again, thank you for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. In your upcoming emails, please tell us your views about our broadcast. Wish you all the best. And from Lithuania, as I read, Desiogas Greblionas from Lithuania has sent us an email. Desiogas says, "Hello, dear friends, and I am sorry for such delay in replying your email. I'm interested in different countries and their cultures, and shortwave radio is one of the instruments to get familiar with various cultures. I do also want to visit Iran once the pandemic is over. Your country seems to be an amazing jewel of Asia. Kind regards and stay safe." Salam and greetings from Iran and IRIB English Radio to Desiogas from Lithuania. Many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Yes, as you noted in your email, shortwave radio and, of course, traditional radio is one of the instruments to get familiar with various cultures and countries around the world. And as you've mentioned, we have different programs about our country, Iran, in IRIB English Radio, which you can choose and listen to them. We also hope that you visit Iran once the pandemic is over. Wish you all the best, Desiogas Greblionas from Lithuania. Desiogas, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future, and in your upcoming emails, please tell us which programs you like the best. Thanks a lot. Write to us soon. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Fabricio Andrade Silva from Brazil. Fabricio says, "Dear friends in IRIB English Radio, greetings from Brazil. I just wanted to remind you via this email to send me a QSL card, and that you do not need to send it via postal system. Just fill it up with my reception report information and send me a photo of it here by email. I will be glad for that. Thanks, and have a nice day." Salam and greetings to you, Fabricio Andrade Silva from Brazil, and warm thanks to you for sending us this email. Of course, my colleagues in IRIB English Radio are designing eQSL cards for you, and we'll send them to our dear listeners in the future so that there won't be any need, as you said, to send you the paper QSL card via postal system, which, as you may know, is this trend is stopped because of coronavirus restrictions around the world and because of postal system restrictions. Anyway, we wish you all the best. Keep in touch with us and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. Wish you all the best. Stay healthy and safe. Also from Germany, we have an email from Ronald Hagenson. Ronald Hagenson from Germany, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear friends, it's a great pleasure to listen to your programs here in Bremen, Germany, in the late afternoon hour. It's my hobby to listen to radio worldwide on medium and shortwave. This is my second attempt to listen to IRIB English Radio. I hope to continue our correspondence and would be very pleased if you confirm my reception report with your detailed verification letter or card. With the best wishes and regards for IRIB English Radio." Greetings to you, Ronald Hagenson from Germany. And it's also a great pleasure for us to have you as a listener who lives in Bremen, Germany. And as you said, it's your hobby to listen to shortwave radio or medium wave radio. Okay, keep up the good work and, keep this correspondence going on. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And about the verification letter or QSL card, as you may know. Soon in the future, we will send our dear listeners eQSL cards, and that is because of the coronavirus restrictions. Wish you all the best, Ronald Hagenson from Germany. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Okay, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Stay tuned, please. You just heard a piece of Iranian traditional music. And the last but not the least email is from R.B. Kumar from India. R.B. Kumar from India says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, I want to say that please register my name in your mailing list and send me all types of materials by your radio service time to time, like magazine, QSL card, program guide, and many more. I am a philatelist and I collect used postage stamps and all types of postal materials which carry stamps like postcards, envelope, etc. I hope you will send me materials and help me collect stamps." First of all, salam and greetings to you, R.B. Kumar from India, and lots of thanks for sending us this email. You requested registering your name in our mailing list and sending you materials of IRIB English Radio, like souvenirs of here. Of course, I inform my colleagues about registering your name in our mailing list. What about your request about sending you souvenirs of IRIB English Radio and also QSL card? As we have mentioned several times during our program, this trend, of course, is not possible during the coronavirus pandemic. But we can send you EQSL card in the future because our colleagues are designing and preparing such QSL cards for our dear listeners. Of course, IRB English Radio had the tradition of sending our dear listeners what you've requested, like magazines, paper QSL cards, postcards that had the pictures of Iranian monuments, and they were so beautiful. But now this trend is stopped because of the restrictions of the postal system, international postal system, because of coronavirus pandemic. We hope this virus is eradicated very soon in the future. Anyway, this interaction with you and us in IRB English Radio, RB Kumar, should keep going on. So we are waiting for your email and your views about IRB English Radio broadcast. And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, the Sunday program. Keep in touch with IRB English Radio and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Unbeknownst to many Americans, the U.S. military and its allies are engaged in bombing and killing people in other countries on a daily basis, says media Benjamin Ryder in an article published under the heading Trump and Biden's Secret Bombing Wars. Stay tuned for the details, please. On February 25th, U.S. President Joe Biden ordered U.S. Air Forces to drop 7 500-pound bombs on Iraqi resistance forces in Syria, reportedly killing 22 people. The Western media reported the U.S. airstrike as an isolated and exceptional incident, and there has been significant blowback from the U.S. public, Congress, and the world community, condemning the strikes as illegal and a dangerous escalation of yet another conflict in the West Asia region. But, unbeknownst to many Americans, the U.S. military and its allies are engaged in bombing and killing people in other countries on a daily basis. The U.S. and its allies have dropped more than 326,000 bombs and missiles on people in other countries since 2001, including over 152,000 in Iraq and Syria. That's an average of 46 bombs and missiles per day, day in and day out, year in, year out, for nearly 20 years. In 2019, the last year for which we have fairly complete records, the average was 42 bombs and missiles per day, including 20 per day in Afghanistan alone. So if those 7 500-pound bombs were the only bombs the U.S. and its allies dropped on February 25th, it would have been an unusually quiet day for U.S. and allied air forces and for their enemies and victims on the ground, compared to an average day in 2019 or most of the past 20 years. On the other hand, if the unrelenting U.S. air assault on countries across the West Asia region finally began to diminish over the past year, this bombing may have been an unusual spike in violence, but which of these was it and how would we know? Americans don't know because their government don't want them to. From January 24 until February 2020, the U.S. military kept track of how many bombs and missiles it dropped on Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, and published those figures in regular monthly air power summaries, which were readily available to journalists and the public. But in March 2020, the Trump administration abruptly stopped publishing U.S. air power summaries, and the Biden administration has so far not published any either. As with human casualties and mass destruction that these hundreds of thousands of airstrikes cause, the U.S. and international media only report on a tiny fraction of them. Without regular U.S. air power summaries, comprehensive databases of airstrikes in other war zones, and serious mortality studies in countries involved, the American public and the world are left almost completely in the dark about the death and destruction of U.S. leaders keep wrecking in American people's name. The disappearance of air power summaries has made it impossible to get a clear picture of the current scale of U.S. airstrikes. Here are up-to-date figures on U.S. and allied airstrikes from 2001 to the present, highlighting the secrecy in which they have abruptly been shrouded for the past year. These figures are based on U.S. air power summaries for Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. The Bureau of Investigative Journalism count of drone strikes in Pakistan, Somalia, and Yemen. The Yemen Data Project's count of Saudi-led airstrikes in Yemen. The New America Foundation's database of foreign airstrikes in Libya and other published statistics. Figures for 2021 are only through January. There are several categories of airstrikes that are not included in this table, meaning that the true numbers of airstrikes are certainly higher. These include helicopter strikes. Military Times published an article in February 2017 titled "The U.S. Military's Stats on Deadly Airstrikes Are Wrong. Thousands have gone unreported." The largest pool of airstrikes not included in U.S. air power summaries are strikes by attack helicopters. The U.S. Army told the authors its helicopters had conducted 456 otherwise unreported airstrikes in Afghanistan in 2016. The authors explained that the non-reporting of helicopter strikes has been consistent throughout the post-9/11 wars, and they still did not know how many actual missiles were fired in those 456 attacks in Afghanistan in the 1 year they investigated. AC-130 gunships. The airstrike that destroyed the Doctors Without Borders hospital in Kunduz, Afghanistan in 2015 was not conducted with bombs or missiles, but a Lockheed Boeing AC-130 gunship. These machines of mass destruction, usually manned by U.S. Air Force Special Operations Forces, are designed to circle a target on the ground, pouring howitzer shells and cannon fire into it, often until it is completely destroyed. The U.S. has used AC-130s in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, and Syria. Stratifying runs. U.S. air power summaries for 2004 to 2007 included a note that their tally of strikes with munitions dropped does not include 20mm and 30mm cannon or rockets. But the 30mm cannons on A-10 Warthogs and other ground attack planes are powerful weapons originally designed to destroy Soviet tanks. A-10s fire 65 depleted uranium shells per second to blanket an area with deadly and indiscriminate fire, but that does not count as a weapons release in U.S. air power summaries. Counterinsurgency and counterterrorism operations in other parts of the world. The United States of America formed a military coalition with 11 West African countries in 2005, and now has a drone base in Niger. But we have not found a database of U.S. and allied airstrikes in that region, or in the Philippines, Latin America, or elsewhere. It was clearly no coincidence that Trump stopped publishing air power summaries right after the February 2020 U.S. withdrawal agreement with the Taliban, reinforcing the false impression that the war in Afghanistan was over. In fact, the U.S. bombing resumed after only an 11-day pause. As the table shows, 2018 and 2019 were back-to-back record years for U.S. airstrikes in Afghanistan. But how about 2020? Without the official records, we don't know whether the withdrawal agreement led to a serious reduction in airstrikes or not. President Biden has foolishly tried to use airstrikes in Syria as leverage with Iran, instead of simply rejoining the Iran nuclear agreement as he promised during the election campaign. Biden is likewise trailing along in Trump's footsteps by shrouding U.S. airstrikes in the secrecy that Trump used to obscure his failure to end the endless wars. It is entirely possible that the highly publicized February 25th airstrikes, like Trump's April 2017 missile strikes on Syria, were a diversion from much heavier but largely unreported U.S. bombing already underway elsewhere. In that case, the frightful destruction of Mosul, Iraq's former second city. The only way that Biden can reassure the American public that he's not using Trump's wall of secrecy to continue America's devastating air wars, notably in Afghanistan, is to end this secrecy now and resume the publication of complete and accurate U.S. air power summaries. Biden cannot restore the world's respect for American leadership or the American public's support for U.S. foreign policy by piling more lies, secrets, and atrocities on top of those he has inherited. If he keeps trying to do so, he might well find himself following in Trump's footsteps in yet another way. As the failed one-term president of a destructive and declining empire.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on February 17, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participation of people from Tabriz and East Azerbaijan, commemorating the anniversary of the Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
The characteristics of Tabriz and Azerbaijan. Sometimes a person only joins a movement, and sometimes a person creates an orientation and causes a development, and they influence its formation and its continuation. Tabriz and Azerbaijan are like this. In the era when the late Mirza Shirazi issued the famous tobacco fatwa against the attempt by colonial powers to monopolize Iranian tobacco, the late Haji Mirza Jawad Mujtahid, an outstanding scholar in Tabriz, whose family is well known for introducing Mujtahids, was an influential personality. Well, at that time, Mirza Shirazi was in Samarra. If it had not been for the scholars in Iran, figures such as Mirza Ashtiani in Tehran, Haji Mirza Jawad Mujtahid in Tabriz, and other ulama in other cities. That fatwa would not have become comprehensive and would not have produced the desired effect. In Azerbaijan, the late Haji Mirza Jawad entered the arena in an active manner. The same is true of the constitutional era. Later on, I will expand on this matter. Therefore, in the historic and political developments of the country, generally, Azerbaijan and especially Tabriz created a wave of influential orientations.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
The next point is that Azerbaijan was Iran's strong fortress against foreign attacks. We were always subject to attacks launched by aggressive neighbors, Tsarist Russia, the former Ottoman Empire and former Soviet Union. If it had not been for Azerbaijan and Tabriz, and for their resistance, steadfastness and sacrifices, it would have been possible for those attacks to be drawn into the central areas of the country. Azerbaijan has been a strong dam and fortress which has always repelled and frustrated those attacks.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.